Hello and welcome to the Interior Design Business. This is Jeff Hayward and with my co-host, Susie Rumbold, past president of the British Institute of Interior Design and creative director of Tessuto Interiors, today we're looking at how to grow your design business in the company of acclaimed interior designer, Laura Hammett.
There are few UK designers as admired and emulated as Laura Hammett, both for her signature style and for the glamorous international projects in her portfolio. But what is her backstory? Has her eponymous company always been so successful? And how does she continue to stay one step ahead of the competition? And where is she planning to take her business next? Welcome to the Interior Design Business.
Laura, welcome to the show.
Hi, thanks for having me.
Laura, I know you studied interior architecture. Where exactly did you do your degree?
I did it at Brighton University, and actually at the time that was the first course, at least that first year, I think, where they were doing interior architecture rather than architecture or interior design. And it was a little bit, I would say, an experimental year for us. They didn't really know, I think, where we sat. We were doing some of the kind of architecture courses, some of the lectures, but there was no real kind of tried and tested path for it. I think it was Brighton and Nottingham Trent that were doing that subject, and that was it. Whereas now it's a very kind of well-known, in the middle, a little bit of everything kind of course.
Yeah, definitely. And what was the thing you enjoyed most about what you studied?
I mean, in all honesty, I don't think it was hugely rewarding for me personally. I enjoyed, obviously, the experience of being in Brighton. Probably what I got most from it was that the course wasn't for me. I think I just learned that I want to be a hands-on, practical learner. It was very, very conceptual, which I think just didn't do very much for me creatively. I felt like I was kind of just, we were just having a go and kind of, you know, making buildings out of ice, and it was meant to be the kind of transiency of an object and that kind of thing. That just didn't connect with me. I wanted to do something that felt very real. And I guess I didn't feel probably that the course taught me. It didn't teach me enough practical skills, which I'm sure it does now. For example, CAD wasn't on the curriculum. You could do it as an extra.
What year are we talking?
Oh, very long time ago. No, I just can't remember. I mean, I would say 2003, is that? Does that sound about right?
Maybe CAD was a thing?
It was a thing, but it wasn't a mainstream thing. At least it wasn't on offer for us. There may well have been an additional paid course that we could have done, which just wasn't an option for me then. So we did hand drawing, which was actually quite a wonderful thing. Obviously, I've never used it in practice, but I think they're called rotary pens. And that was just a really kind of enjoyable, cathartic process of actually drawing on those big kind of tracing sheets. But it's not very practical. You had to kind of scratch out if you made a mistake or wanted to make an amendment. So I think I left the course feeling very clear about what type of learner I was, but not with a huge amount of skills to bring into the workplace. So I came back to London where my mum was living, and I had that kind of summer of what do I do? Do I do another course? Do I look at the obvious kind of interior design courses within London? A lot of them, at the time, it was more limited. There were a lot of very, very expensive ones, which weren't an option for me. Or do I just go straight into work experience? And I think that felt like a much better fit for me. And I had an amazing opportunity with an old school friend who was working with a startup who were doing a whole kind of breadth of design elements. So they were doing product design, they were doing graphic design. They had their first interior design project, and it was actually for a very, very well-known person, which I probably shouldn't say, but a racing driver. And they brought me in as the only, at the time, interior design person who would, you know, someone then joined me very quickly, but I was just thrown in as an intern at this very, very beginning of this great company. And it was amazing. I mean, it was a complete whirlwind, but everything that I learned or needed to learn, I got from that job.
So that was a residential project, and did more work flow from that? How did that kind of evolve?
Yeah, so we did a few different residential projects with that company, and it was amazing. I mean, it was so hands-on, and I would never have got that experience if I'd gone to a more established interior design company. They gave me so much trust. It was amazing. And I learned CAD, taught myself CAD actually. Vectorworks while I was there, which they really supported. I think they did send me off actually on a one-day course just to top it up. But
1 day is not much.
Yeah, but I do. I that tends to be my process, is I just kind of like to have a go and learn. Aaron, my husband, always jokes that I hate instructions. I like to just have a go and figure something out myself. It takes a bit longer, but I feel more like I'm achieving it that way. So I just got exposed to everything. I got exposed to budgeting, obviously all the design side of things, but the actual installation, the client management, I mean, I was having direct contact with clients from day one. And somebody who was quite intimidating to me as a very young 20s.
And you were 22 or something
about
at this point.
That, yeah.
Yeah, wow.
Yeah. I was only there for a few years, 2 or 3 years maximum. And I did, me and this friend of mine, who was also, he was doing graphics and products, but he was also doing some of the interiors with me. Yeah, we ran our own project for this really nice young guy. It was a big house in Chelsea. And it was amazing. I mean, we were completely left to kind of do our own design and manage it. And we did a great job. And I think that absolutely catapulted me in terms of confidence. So I really, really am so grateful to them for giving me that trust. And I think I came away feeling like, you know what, I can do this.
So where did you go after that?
So then I went on to another interior designer in London. Again, a small one. I think I really rate working at the beginning of your career for small companies. Having said that, I do feel like what I learned as an intern, I do try and give that same kind of level of hands-on opportunity to interns who come to us.
That's because
I know how important it is. Exactly. Because I think it's quite often people do just get thrown into an internship within a bigger company. We're by no means a big company, but we're somewhere in the middle, I think, within the industry. You can be just really stuck doing kind of making tea and things like
schedules.
That. Yeah, exactly. So we do like to move people around different teams and expose them. And I think that's because I know that how important that was for me.
Were you working on the same type of projects at this second company?
Yes, I was. Again, it was really a really small company. So again, very hands-on. I was running projects very early on. At the very start, it was just me and the owner. So I just think, you know, getting that level of exposure, seeing the entire life cycle of a project, but also seeing some of the business side of things, like how, why something matters, if a mistake is made, what that actually means in terms of a kind of financial, you know,
impact.
You've got impact. Exactly. Whereas I think if you're working at a very low level in a bigger company and you're not exposed to kind of what's going on at the top, you don't get to learn in the same way.
And do you think you were able to develop a style through those early years, or were you quite constrained by the briefs in what you could do?
I would say I didn't. And that's partly because the companies I was working for were slightly different aesthetic to my natural one. But also, I just don't think I had the confidence at that point. I had confidence in my ability to deliver a project. I knew that I was good at running a project. I think my creative confidence came a lot later. And I'm not sure why that is. I think I just would second guess myself. And I think potentially working for these two other companies, I did spend a lot of time, you know, interpreting their aesthetic, very client-led as well, which is a great skill and something I use now because we have very varied tastes within our clients, more so than people are aware because we don't always share all of our projects. So we do a lot more varied design. And I think I learned that skill early on. But it took me quite a few years to really have the confidence to say, no, this is what I love and this is what my brand is going to start kind of exploring.
So would it be your recommendation then to young designers starting out to always go and work for someone else?
I would say so, yeah. I mean, it's an interesting industry in this country particularly where there's no kind of barrier to entry. Anyone can start an interior design business, which is a great thing, but it's also can be almost too easy. And I think it's tough. I think you have to see that for yourself and actually experience. It can be quite a stressful job. It's also not nearly as creative as people think it is. And I think it's always beneficial to get some work experience. I just think even if, you know, you can only do it for a few months, it's not an option for everybody to do for various different reasons, but I do always encourage it. I get a lot of people coming to me in kind of later life saying, right, I want to change careers after having children. I've taken the time to have some phone calls with people recently because I think it's a really big decision. And I think my advice is always the same. If you can get just even a few weeks with a studio, I think you learn so much. You learn what type of company you want to have or maybe don't want to have. And I think it's better to give you the context really of what you're up against, because if you're starting a business, you will be at some point competing against other businesses, you need to kind of understand what the landscape of the industry looks like.
Can you remember how long ago or how early in your career it was when you thought, I'm going to set up on my own and do this myself?
That's a really interesting one, because in some ways I would say I had fantasies of it quite early on when I started. I remember just imagining, how would I do my own sample library? How would I file it? Like having those kind of fantasies of, like, if I was doing it just myself, this is how I would do it. But I don't think I ever really sat down and thought, right, I am now going to start a company. It was a very, very accidental thing that came about.
I was just interested as to whether deep down there was this kind of entrepreneurial gene.
I don't know. I ask myself this all the time, and I talk to people who knew me long time before as well, because I think it was a surprise to me, and definitely a surprise to people who know me, that I've done what I've done. And actually, I joke, because we had this bonkers day on Tuesday, I think it was, where we were featured in Metro. And my face was on the cover of the Metro, which is a really strange thing. And I live very much in this kind of bubble of, you know, people in our kind of Instagram community know what we do. But beyond that, a lot of people I know don't really know what I do. I have a very kind of separate personal life. And I got messages from people I haven't seen for years going, what are you doing on the cover of Metro? Like, really strange, because it doesn't really sit with kind of
who I
probably who I actually am. I don't know. It is a bit of a contrast, I think. But it's obviously come from somewhere. You know, I do have this some kind of innate drive to do something for myself. I guess I was never that good at being told what to do, probably. I mean, I was a good employee. I took it very seriously, probably too seriously. I remember getting super stressed, and I look back and I just think, wow, in hindsight, that seems like that wasn't my problem. It felt like my problem at the time. But equally, I think I do like to do things my way. So it probably does suit me better.
So when you first went out on your own, you had a small retail business. How on earth did that come about?
Well, that was really an accident. I had been obviously working in the industry. There was this difficult situation in my personal life where my half-sister's mother died, my stepmother died very, very suddenly, and she was very young. And I, at the time, was the only person who was able to care for her. So I moved in to parent her, and I was quite in my early 20s. It just put kind of things on hold. It made it very difficult to work full time. So I made the decision to kind of stay home and what can I do to just pay the bills for us? So I just kind of dug deep, and what are my kind of random skills that I picked up along the way? Things like sewing. I was okay at computer, you know. So I started building a website, selling some products, selling some cushions that I would sew myself at home. And it was really very, very small. But then that spurred me on to kind of think, what else can I sell on this website? And started reaching out to other people who were doing kind of handmade, smaller homeware pieces. And I sold a few things. And I even had a couple of nice brands on there, like Johnson's of Elgin. I had some nice blankets. Which a lot of people got for Christmas that year. But it was a fun exercise. So a local friend of mine was doing something similar with emerging artists. And we'd spotted this empty premises on this lovely little high street. And we thought, wouldn't it be fun to just do a little kind of pop-up? So we found the landlord, who was a local estate agent, actually. And we did this kind of pitch, very like ballsy pitch. I don't know where that came from, of just like, right, we're going to do this. It's going to transform your high street. We're going to make it amazing. Not really having any real confidence in ourselves. It was a total blag. And he was like, well, it's empty. So if you want to do it and you cover the cost of the bills and you do any kind of fix of it yourself, then go for it. And we said, right, if we do that, can we have 3 months free rent? And if it works out, we'll pay you rent. So we had, I think, 2 weeks before we were set to open the doors, and we went to B&Q and bought lots of MDF and lots of paint and lots of sanding, those little sanding machines.
I was going to say, there is a wonderful photograph of you somewhere sitting on the floor sanding the floors.
Yeah. I mean, I think I had something tied around my face because it was so dusty. It was so fun. It was one of the most fun 2 weeks I've ever had. And we built all these display stands. I mean, it was mad, the stuff that we managed to achieve. got her brother to do some slightly dodgy electrics, which were definitely not signed off. But it was great fun. And we got it looking presentable. It was, you know, shabby, but it had a nice kind of vibe to it. And then we opened the doors and we had friends and family come and it was really fun. So she had all her artist's work on the walls and I had my products on display on this kind of two-tiered little makeshift stand that went around the outside. And it was really, really fun. And we had a little cash till that we bought from eBay and took a few, you know, local kind of passers-by, customers came in. But that then got me chatting to some of the locals because I think I'd mentioned that I did interior design and that, you know, that's why I've selected all these nice things. And then it would lead on to, can you reupholster a sofa? Can you do a bathroom design? And I just started doing interiors that way. And that's kind of how it started, which is a bit of an unconventional start.
I didn't intend,
you know, at no point did I consciously say, right, I want to open an online, this is what I want my career to be. It was just, that's what made sense for me in that moment. It was never a permanent decision. And then equally falling back into interior design, everything just kind of happened and I went with it.
After the sofa and the bathroom, what happened next?
So the projects would just slowly kind of get bigger and bigger. I was doing kind of part homes within that little bubble of West London, which there were some really lovely properties. And my sister still lives around there. So when I drive past, I think, oh, I did their curtains. I did. There's so many houses that I remember going into. But the size of the project just grew a little bit, but very kind of slowly. But I think the main full design project that I did was for a developer who was local, and he was doing, well, local is in Chiswick, which was kind of not too far from where we were. And he was doing a very interesting, he'd bought a property which was, and actually this was a really, really profound moment for me, actually. It was a development where he'd had an architect on board already, and it was a very strange kind of dwelling that was had a very, very pitched roof. It was originally a studio and he wanted to turn it into a two-floor family home with three bedrooms. So the layout design was, there was none. So the architect had done this design where it was traditional living room on downstairs and bathrooms and bedrooms upstairs. And I looked at it and I just thought, this doesn't feel right to me. It doesn't feel like that pitched roof is going to give you that headspace in those kind of outer parts of that top floor like he has drawn in 2D. But he was a, you know, middle-aged man, and I was a 20-something woman. And that is a strange feeling to be in those meetings where you're listening to somebody very confidently say, this is the layout. And I was thinking, that doesn't feel right to me. But I didn't feel like I was the one to say, hang on, stop the train, let's look at this differently. So actually, I got my husband, Aaron, to do a SketchUp model. He was very good at 3D because I felt like I needed something to go back and get them to kind of believe me. So we did the SketchUp model of this roof and we kind of worked out what the build-up of the ceiling be. And actually, can you put a wardrobe there? No, not in a million years. Can you even stand at that toilet if you're a man? Not in a million years. So I came back kind of slightly sheepishly and presented this like alternative layout where I said, okay, could we do this kind of very cool loft style living space with a kitchen, living room upstairs, where we can just cleverly work the kitchen design around these kind of tight corners and then just have a really good simple layout downstairs. The architect, I remember very clearly, he put it in writing to the developer, copied me in saying, for what it's worth, I don't agree with Laura's decision. But the developer trusted me and said, right, let's do this, changed everything, and that's what was built. It was very scary for me, and actually I remember it happened just before I went away to get married and on my honeymoon, and I felt like, if this goes wrong, it could really ruin my wedding and honeymoon, because this is on me. This is essentially, this was like, he was saying, right, we trust you that this is the right decision, because if this doesn't work, we've got a property that doesn't sell, it's on you.
So what was Aaron's background then that he was able to do, was he in this, from this space as well?
He was a product designer. So he was very similar kind of approach to design, but small scale products. But it really, you know, he will always say that a house is just a very big product. It's the same process of design. And he's also just ridiculously good at everything he tries. So as soon as he will probably come onto that, he did join the company eventually, but you know, whatever he has a go at, he becomes the expert at, which is
so
really
annoying. It's not that traditional blend of one person's the creative and one's the business
person. No, no. I mean, I think we both have elements of a business kind of brain. On paper, he's managing director, I'm creative director, but actually I don't think in reality it is that clear cut. He does a lot of design, particularly the IA design, interior architecture design, but I'm also very involved in the business, particularly with this new business that's very much more my baby. So we cross over in lots of different ways. It's fluid. I mean, we've got a name on paper just so we have a signature on our email. It doesn't really mean a huge amount.
So how long after you set up did Aaron join you? Was he part of the company at that point or was he just helping out?
He was just helping out, and we were relatively early on in our relationship. He joined in 2011 officially, and I'd started some form of business at those very early days in 2008. So yeah, a few years in, and it was a really difficult decision. We went back and forth on it a lot because we had a lot to lose if it didn't work. And for a lot of people, I'm sure it doesn't work, working with your other half. But he was so integral behind the scenes that it felt like a very natural step for us. And I wanted to, so we'd got married, he was still in his other job, which he'd been at for 9 years. So within the design industry, that's quite a secure setup. And, you know, the idea of us being kind of a married couple with just this new business together was daunting. But we wanted to have children. I knew that I wanted to be able to take some time off to do that. So it just felt like it's now or never. Let's just give it a go.
And it sounds like the first project, that project in Chiswick, was actually kind of really formative in just not just your relationship, but also how the business developed.
I think so. And just gave me confidence. I mean, I say that it was a profound moment for me personally, because I really do think it was. I mean, that project, more than any project I've ever done, I felt really quite belittled by the wider team. And really, like, I was just there to kind of fluff some cushions, and that was what I brought to the table. So I really had to dig deep to prove my worth on that project, and I did, and it was a great success. It really worked out well, and that architect ate his words.
Nice. When did you employ your first staff member?
When I was late pregnancy, a lovely girl called Maya, who was amazing, and she'd interned at another studio and was really assertive and confident, and she was great, and she gave me confidence to say, right, okay, you know, you can work with Aaron while I'm taking some time off. She was very focused on FF&E, so the furnishing side of the business, which is something that Aaron's never been too, you know, keen on getting heavily involved in. So she was the perfect person to kind of sit alongside him. And she got on really well with clients. She's got her own business now. She's doing great. And she was with us for a while. It started off as an intern and just worked her way up.
I think for many designers listening as well, that sort of step from growing as your business, having a family and still growing the business is a really tough
really
one
hard.
To plan for.
Yeah, it's really hard. And I don't think, you know, I often get asked for advice on that. There's no real advice. It's really hard. You just have to, you become incredibly efficient. I think I really rate mothers when we're employing, because I think they're so amazingly efficient at getting their work done, because it's just a skill that you learn as a working mother. So a lot of our team members have children. You're incredibly focused because you've got to get out of the door at a certain time, so you've got to get the most out of your day.
And how has the business then evolved since those first heady early days?
Slowly but surely, we've just kind of grown in terms of the scale of project, the budgets, but at a very organic pace. And I'm really grateful for that, because I think it can be quite destructive if you suddenly get these incredible projects. It's so hard to say no to an amazing project, but equally you have to
resource them.
You have to be ready for them. So I think we had a slower start than a lot of other studios that we're now kind of working alongside in the industry now. They've not necessarily been around for as many years, and I admire them for having kind of kept it together with that level of growth. I think it can be quite challenging. So it's been a really nice steady growth, which has allowed us to kind of catch up each time, but also not get bored. I do like to be challenged. So I think if we were just kind of coasting along, I think I would get itchy feet. So it's really nice to feel like, you know, we're still getting those projects that are challenging, whether it's in a very different location in the world, which always throws up different challenges, or it's just a different scale. And we're doing some project sizes that I wouldn't have dreamt of even 5 years ago, let alone 10 years ago. So that's really exciting.
And Laura Hammett Interior Design now exists also with Laura Hammett Living. So talk to us about that. How did all that come about?
Well, I mean, that's been probably the part of my career that I'm most excited about, probably because I'm very much in it at the moment. And I think I enjoy talking about the beginnings of Laura Hammett, the interior design business, because I think I do love to build a business. I think that's something that I've realized. And I maybe was missing that a little bit. Like, we've got to such an amazing point where the business feels so nicely established, but it really is exciting to kind of go back to the beginning and build something up again. And this idea of a product business felt like such a natural extension, because we're buying so much for our clients and we do so much bespoke design that it just seems kind of crazy that we're not getting involved in that whole process, that whole side of things. So it started off with accessories, which is what we launched at the end of last year. And that is everything that you use to style your home. So trays, picture frames, boxes, but also faux florals, vases,
blankets, cushions.
Yeah, so cushions is really fun. And for that reason, it just felt like full cycle. But it's all online. So we've got an e-commerce website, which was really, really funny.
Back to the start.
A lot more professional. The website is a lot more.
It works. Presumably.
It works a lot better. It's a lot more, not nearly as basic. But what was interesting is that we launched on the year that we had our kind of 15-year anniversary. And we actually managed to, or through this clever website, to track down the bare bones of my first website. And, you know, it's so interesting just to see how far things have come. And it's quite, on a personal level, quite amazing for me. And I'm not very good at taking a step back and thinking, wow, that's cool. But it has been really lovely. So the products are all available to buy online. Everything's, all the smaller items are held in stock. But what we're working on now is the big launch, like the big main kind of substance of Laura Hammett Living, which I think by the time this podcast comes out, I think we would have launched, which is really exciting. At the moment, we're right kind of in the thick of getting ready for that launch. But it is a very extensive collection of furniture and lighting. And we've got a lot of products to launch and a lot more in development and production at the moment, because what we're doing is we're able to kind of showcase these pieces on our clients' projects. And what's happened naturally in that process, because our types of projects are quite varied, so we do quite a few kind of listed buildings, very, very beautiful old period buildings within London, but also other parts of the country. But we're also doing a lot of contemporary design as well. And we like to design within the vernacular of the building. So to make sure that it feels very kind of authentic, you know where you are and you've got kind of context to that. So what's happened very naturally is it's created two different collections. So we've got a contemporary collection, which is probably a bit more contemporary than our typical. So it's a little bit, we pushed that look a little bit further.
Edgier.
Yeah, and then we've got a modern heritage collection, which is, they are still contemporary pieces, but they're very much referencing antiques, or there's detailing, there's finishes. We've got lots of burr walnut. We've got some starburst veneer.
They would sit well within those buildings.
Yeah, they would. Exactly. So they've been very much inspired by and informed by these projects we've worked on. And it's just a natural kind of collection of pieces, which feels really exciting for me. It's a completely different way to design. So I'm designing for that, always for that project, but also thinking, okay, but is this also something that would work in a different project? And the price points, is that going to work for everyone? And so it's been really exciting and challenging, and it just unlocked something different for me creatively and made me see our projects, kind of opened up our projects and the opportunities.
So at what point did you suddenly, how did you go about planning these collections, you know, the balance of the pieces within them? And were you just kind of saying, well, there's a chair, there's a table, there's a bedside cabinet, you know, what was your thinking behind coming up with the ranges?
I mean, some ways it's just happened. As with most things I do, it just kind of, I just kind of go with it, and then it all starts to fall into place. So I am a planner, but I'm also quite in kind of, what's the word?
Spontaneous
person as well. So I kind of just go with where I'm being pulled. But I think it's naturally formed a kind of well-rounded collection because we're designing full homes. Therefore, we're going to have dining chairs, dining tables, pendants, bedside tables. It kind of ticks every box naturally that a customer base would also be looking for. But we also don't ever want our clients' projects to feel too samey or too over, you know, like every piece feeling like it's from a kind of set. So I've taken that into the collection as well. So there's a kind of a design thread, but the pieces could all potentially be used all together and you wouldn't feel like you've gone to one shop and bought everything. You know, we've got lots of different materials and lots of different shapes, lots of different kind of individual influences, particularly within the Modern Heritage collection where it's much more eclectic. And we've also done a lot of projects where we've combined the two collections together, which works really nicely. So they do still have a kind of thread. It feels like us, but it feels like we're kind of, you know, doing something a little bit different with each piece as well.
It's an aspiration for many interior designers to have
ranges,
their own collection.
Yeah.
So the stage at which you as a business get to, where you've got the freedom to do that, how do you judge that?
I think you know. I think there's definitely, we got to a point where we felt so stable and secure in what we'd built with the interiors. And I wouldn't, and actually this is something I've wanted to do for so long. And we've only recently, you know, beginning of last year was when it all really kicked off. And I was waiting for the right time. And I do think there is a right time. Unlike many other things where you're never ready, I think you should be ready for this because I think otherwise you're risking watering yourself down too much. I needed to feel like our business was so stable and we had all the support that we needed for me because I have had to deviate a little bit of attention onto the other business. But at the same time, they are so intertwined. So I'm designing pieces that are within a project. In many ways, I'm even more involved in those projects than ever because I'm also working on this collection that is going to sit within some of these projects. So I think getting your business really stable, feeling very supported so that your projects and your clients, which will always be my absolute priority, are not ever feeling like my attention's elsewhere.
Sure. And ultimately, everything in business is about taking decisions that are going to have minimum risk attached to them. So you've got to get to a certain point before you can do something like this.
I think so. Yeah, I think so. But also, you know, I think I quite like a little bit of excitement, a little bit of a challenge.
I'm interested to know this must have been massively time consuming.
It is.
I mean, have you just, and having said you're not taking your eye off the ball with your existing and your future clients, are you just working double the number of hours you were a year ago?
Yeah, a little bit sometimes. At the moment, yes. And that's challenging for me as a mother. But it's a little bit a combination of both. I think I'm getting even better at delegating, and which I think is a really important thing as a business owner anyway, to be able to give that autonomy to your team. I think a lot of business owners within our industry are very, very kind of micromanaging. And I really want people to feel like they're able to kind of do their best work. But at the same time, nothing goes out of the studio without Aaron and I kind of
course.
You know. So it's getting that balance right and making sure that feels comfortable and that is going to work for the Laura Hammett interiors. But I have just done a lot of late nights. I work a little bit at the weekends. But to be honest, I love it so much that it doesn't feel like a chore. I'm quite buzzy with it and I could probably do it, you know, quite happily at the weekend without thinking too much about it. I have to stop myself so that I do have a life outside.
And there's an appetite that you must have to source craftspeople who can make these products for you to make sure they're the right people putting the products together at the right sort of quality levels.
Absolutely.
That you want.
I mean, quality is everything. And it's really, that's one thing I absolutely hand on heart stand by with this collection is the quality, which I'm so proud of. We've worked really, really hard at that supply chain to make sure that these are proper pieces that will last for generations, which, because, you know, they're high value pieces. These are real investment pieces and you are getting what you pay for. And that's what I always wanted. I wanted to be able to absolutely stand by selling pieces to people that I know will really last them as proper quality. And they're incredibly heavy, for example, which is so different from what we're used to with a lot of our other suppliers because they're solid. You know, it's really, really beautifully made products, and that's fun.
So it sounds as though you don't, at this stage, have a dedicated Laura Hammett product team within your team, or do you?
I mean, it's a very small number of us. So, I mean, we've got a COO, Robert, who's absolutely amazing and who's spinning every plate you can imagine. And then, so I'm doing all the design, which is actually a long time since I could say that, because I think once you're doing lots of projects, you've got teams, you know, obviously the creative direction and everything is always coming from me, but to physically sit and say every single element of that I have designed myself, that I can say that about every single product in this whole collection, which is a really nice feeling for me to kind of go back to. But we've got Tayara, who is on the procurement side. We've got Sophie, who is on the marketing side. And then we do have a marketing team, an external marketing team, who's also helping us, supporting kind of alongside us.
And are you going to be online only, or do you see yourself going back to that retail premises, talking to a local estate agent, get the Sanders out?
I think so, probably. I mean, I just, at this point, I wouldn't rule anything out. I feel like I would never in a million years have dreamt of this, so who knows where things could go. I mean, I think e-com is the substance of the brand, because I do think I find it very, very hard to get really high quality products online. But more than that, like, I want to be able to, and this is what we're working on now, is all of the imagery, so you can actually really see everything that you're, from every angle, and you can order samples. So giving customers that really good
the confidence to purchase
exactly that without a showroom. But you know, if you have a showroom, it just, your costs go up, it's a different business model. So to be able to be just online, you know, it works as a new business, but to just build that confidence and also to showcase these pieces. I mean, I don't think many brands have the opportunity to show pieces in a real home where everything in the background is also designed by them. And that's really such a privilege. And I should say that, you know, we're working with our clients and we're not saturating their homes full of our pieces. We're doing, you know, a small percentage, allowing us to kind of showcase them, give our clients an access to an amazing price point. They get such a good kind of price point on our own products, which is a real benefit to them at an amazing quality. But we're still doing our bespoke design. We're still kind of, you know, so they just, these two companies sit alongside each other. It's a win-win for our clients, and it's, you know, a great way for us to expand the collection because it's just getting bigger and bigger. We've got a third collection which is in progress, which is called the Natural Collection, which is much more pared back. It's informed by a couple of lovely projects we're working on in the UK. Much more natural finishes, simple shapes.
And it sounds like the two businesses are working kind of hand in hand. You're getting inspiration from the interiors projects you're working on to develop product.
Totally, absolutely. I mean, like I said, every piece has been designed for a project, but it just also then works within the collection.
So I know you may have future plans for a retail outlet where people can see the pieces for real, but will there be any opportunities for the public to see them in advance of that?
Well, yes, we're doing a stand at Focus this year, which is actually where we're kind of officially launching. And that's on from the 16th of September to the 20th. And I will be there manning the stand as much as I possibly can. But that's really exciting. We're kind of showcasing both collections, doing a bit of a kind of mix. And it's a nice way to show how they can be used together. Some of my kind of favorite pieces will be on display. And it's going to be a great opportunity to come in and kind of just actually see the comfort, sit on the chairs, which are super comfortable. And I'm really excited to show it off.
Fantastic. So, what is the one piece of advice you would give to ambitious designers who would like to be where you are today?
Okay, that's a big question.
You can have two pieces of advice then.
I think, unfortunately, the answer is work very, very hard. It just, nothing comes easy. You have to put in the work.
What's that old saying? The harder I work, the luckier I get.
Yeah. And I think I always say instinct is everything, follow your instincts. And I do think that's how it's worked for me. I'm sure it may get me in trouble at times as well, but I think follow whatever is pulling you, that is usually the right direction for you. And if something feels wrong, it's usually for a good reason. So I think I always say it's a female superpower. And I think you kind of listen to your gut, follow your instincts, and generally that takes you to where you should be.
Thank you so much for your time today, Laura. That has just been the most inspirational, I'm buzzing, the most inspirational conversation. It's so nice to, you know, really hear your amazing journey.
Oh, thank you.
Yes,
so much.
Thanks, Laura. And thank you for hosting us here today.
It's well, thank you for having
me. A lovely day in July. What more could you want? We do hope you've enjoyed this episode, and please do get in touch on our social channels at Interior Design Business Pod to share any feedback. The Interior Design Business is a Wildwood Plus production.